I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hi, everyone. I'm back with another book tour bonus episode of Next Question. Today, we are headed to the Golden State, San Francisco, where I got to talk to everyone's favorite Instagram buddy, Leslie Jordan. We had a blast, and I think you will too. My next guest really needs no introduction, with all due respect to David Letterman. So we all got to know him during the early days of the pandemic. I thought his Instagram was so damn funny, I just had to meet him, albeit virtually, and let's just say we took a liking to each other. I've since learned about his incredible, unique life story and just how talented he really is. I mean, he can do it all. I am so excited for you all to get to know the wonderful Leslie Allen Jordan.
Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. I am so happy you're here. Is it hot in here or is it me? What is the deal with this theater? I am like, I've already gone through menopause. What the hell is happening? So talk to us, mister. Tell us what's going on.
Well, what is going on? I'm doing a television show called Call Me Cat with Maya Bialik, who you may know from, you know her from everything. She was Blossom, and she had Jim Parsons.
The Big Bang Theory?
The Big Bang Theory. She was Amy on The Big Bang Theory for years. So I've got that going on. I'm going to be, I've got this whole other career that I just fell into. I'm going to be a rock singer, or like a hymn singer. I don't know what you're going to call me. I've got an album called Company's Coming. And I made a list of, and I'm not a singer, but I, for some reason, hymns, just old Southern hymns, I can sing. Oh, you wouldn't believe.
I know.
Because in church, they said, just sing out for the Lord. And so I would sing. But I came up with a list of everybody I thought I'd like to sing a hymn with. And put together, and every one of them said yes. Dolly Parton. Everybody.
Vince Gill.
Everybody.
And that's so exciting. And you, well, we're going to talk about
Eddie
that.
Eddie Vedder.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Oh,
in fact,
okay.
We got it. No, it's totally fine. I got a clip because I want to show everyone how cute you look in your country outfit. I like your glasses.
Where did I get them?
You got them in the lobby.
I got them from you.
Those are your caddis glasses from the Going
yes.
There tour. But let's talk, Leslie, let's talk first about this whole phenomenon that you created on Instagram. During the pandemic, you started posting. You moved back to Chattanooga, where you're from, stayed with your mama,
mm-hmm.
and you started posting things on Instagram. We're going to take a look at one of them. And it's so random, but so adorable. Let's watch.
Well, shit. What are y'all doing? This is awful. It's still March. How many days in March? When is April gonna fucking get here? Well, my mother hauling up the steps asking me who I'm talking to. I'm talking to my friends, Mama. Quit bothering me. How much more of this can I take?
So you just did these sort of funny stream of consciousness videos, and you ended up, you had kind of maxed out at 80,000 followers, and then you're like, you have 6 million followers now, Leslie. So why do you think so many people gravitated to your feed during the pandemic? What was going on there?
Well, you know, my mother said to me, why would you talk like that? But in all those people, you weren't raised to talk like that, because I said, fucking. And I said, bought you a condo. So, but what happened was I was a marketing genius and I didn't even know it. Because I knew I didn't want to talk about politics, I didn't want to talk about religion, and I didn't want to sell anybody anything. So I didn't even know what content, you know, I wake up in the morning now and I think, I got to come up with some content. You know, I got to post something. Back then, I posted twice a day for 80 days. Just whatever, you know.
And how did people react? And you must have gotten so many DMs and, as I said, so many followers. What were they saying to you?
You know, they were wonderful, because they were saying, you know, it's so tough right now. You know, people would come up to me in the grocery store and saying, I was stuck at home with my husband, my kids, and I just needed a dose of you every day. And I realized the power of comedy, you know, just pure comedy. Just, you know, and as I said, I didn't try to sell anybody. I'm rethinking that part. But it was, you know, and stuck in Tennessee, and my phone rang early on, because it jumped from, like you said, 20. I had 20 or 30, 40,000, and then Megan Mullally, from my Will and Grace days.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, back to me. Sorry. That bitch stole my thunder for 8 years. So, no, she's a dear friend of mine. But anyway, Megan Mullally reposted, and I jumped to about, you know, I guess, I don't know, 80,000, and I thought, wow. And then I don't know what happened. You know, I don't know how that works. But my friend called and said, Leslie, honey, you have gone viral. And I said, no, I'm in Tennessee. I don't have COVID. I'm fine. He said, no, internet viral. And it just...
Well, people, I mean, you just spread so much joy, and you do make people smile and laugh. And, you know, I was talking to Oral Lee Brown. I don't know if you heard our conversation, but she's just an amazing woman. Grew up in Mississippi, one of 12 kids, the daughter of sharecroppers. And I wanted to talk, I'm fascinated about people's childhoods and what makes them tick. You were born and raised in Chattanooga, Tennessee. You have twin sisters.
Twin sisters, 22 months. They're twins and 22 months younger than me.
So tell us a little bit about your childhood, Leslie.
Well, you know, my mother was 19 when I was born. Daddy was 22. You think back, you think, my God, just babies, raising babies. But we were never at home. You know, we were always on the go. My mother and my maternal grandmother, her mother, I think took one look at little Leslie and thought, he's gonna need some help. Because, you know, I wasn't like the other boys. I didn't like sports. You know, and they circle the wagons, as only good Southern mothers can do. They circle those wagons and created this amazing little secret garden where I could play with dolls. You know, I could twirl a baton. You know, I could do whatever I wanted to do. But then, you know, you just knew, you don't tell daddy, you know, don't, because I would sew doll clothes. I said, I'm gonna show daddy. No, don't show daddy. It's just don't show daddy. And then, you know, my dad would come home. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Army. I was not exactly the son he envisioned. And so he would, and I would be twirling a baton in the front yard. You know?
And then, you
but
know.
But he adored me.
He
adored me.
And you lost him when you were just 11 years
11.
Old. 11. What happened?
He was flying. He was in the Army Reserves by then, and he was flying to Hattiesburg, Mississippi from Chattanooga, Tennessee, and this plane, there were 10 men on it, just undershot the runway. It was just, but you know, a terrible time for a kid to lose his dad, you know, and especially, and it's so funny because I thought that maybe I had been somewhat of a disappointment to him. And I mentioned that to my mother, and she was flabbergasted. She said, your daddy adored you. You know, but it's just, I don't know. You know, I felt like, because I wasn't good. And then she told me this crazy story. She said, you know, when you were little, we took you to a wedding. And Alan, my dad, kept saying, Peggy, he's not going to sit still. I'm a very excitable boy. They were right. I was up, I was down. And mother thought, well, I'm going to have to take him out. And mother said, all of a sudden, the bride swept down the aisle. And she said, I just froze like a pointer dog. Like, and couldn't get that bride. And all I could talk about when I got home, and I made up a game called Bride and Goon. And I was the bride. And I had an angel food cake pan on my head. And I'd taken mother's white terrycloth bathrobe and slipped it on backwards. It was Empire waist. It was beautiful. I made my cousin Karen walk me around. I made her be the goon and walk me all around my house. And then for Christmas, I wanted a bride doll. That's what I wanted. And my daddy said to my mother, I'm not going to get him a bride doll, Peggy. I'm just not. You know, we're talking the 50s. You know, we're talking the 1950s. And I'm wanting a bride doll. And so mother said, well, let's just don't mention it again, and maybe he'll forget about it. You know, but it's all I could talk about, Christmas Eve. So mother said, well, I don't know what you're going to say to him in the morning, Alan. And so she heard the front door shut, and my daddy went out. This would have been 58. And bought his 3-year-old son the most beautiful bride doll. Mother said it was in a box of cellophane. And she said when I came down the steps and I saw her under the tree, I squatted in the floor and peed everywhere. I just peed all over the
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
So you have talked about the fact that if you hadn't lost your dad when you were 11 years old as a gay teenager, you might not have come out, or how would that have affected sort of your journey and being open about your sexuality?
You know, I don't know. I told my mother, you know, people say, well, when did you come out? I sort of fell out of the womb into her high heels. So you have to have been in to come out. And I don't know how I negotiated that, but I remember in high school, I'd sit people down. I would say, listen, I have a secret. I need to tell you I'm gay. And they'd go, and? Like, what's the secret? You're gay and you murdered somebody?
It sounds like your father was very supportive of you.
He was supportive. And I just wonder, you know, I just wonder what it would have been like. You know, who knows? He loved me, so I cannot imagine, you know, someone who bought their 3-year-old son a bride doll, you know, being upset, you know. Yeah, you're the one that bought me the bride doll. You made me this way.
More with the one and only Leslie Jordan right after this.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at. Like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, let's talk about, so it's so fascinating. You grow up in Chattanooga, and then you go to UT Knoxville, and you take an acting class, or, you know, just kind of to fulfill some kind of requirement. And then I know you said it performing hit you like a drug.
It was just, I wanted to be a journalist. I was a journalism major, and I took intro to theater for my arts elective. And that afternoon, I went to the head of the department, and I said, what do I do? He said, well, first let's learn how to pronounce. I was saying theater. Wait a minute. Yeah, I'm gonna get a degree in theater. He goes, it's theater. Theater. I want to get me a degree in theater.
But you obviously fell in love with acting.
Got on a bus. $1,200 that my mother sewed into my underpants. I had no fear. I had no fear back then. I just think back on it, it just makes me tired. I got on a bus, $1,200 pinned into my underpants, my degree in theater, and a tiny suitcase, and I got off at the corner of Hollywood and Vine.
So you're 22 years old at the time?
No, I was older than that by then, I think.
Yeah. And you got there, you got to Hollywood, and I know your mom said, if it doesn't work out, you can come home.
She said, and you'll have a standing ovation.
Aw, that's so sweet. And so what was it like when you first got to Hollywood trying to break into the business? Because, you know.
Well, it was interesting because it was very wink, wink. Because you would go out at night to the gay bars and you would dance and this and that, and you would see everybody. You would see producers, you would see actors and this and that. But in the daytime, you know, very wink, wink, you know. And I had representation that were gay. My agent was gay. Everybody was gay. They told me, now, they would call me up and say, now listen, feet on the ground. Put your voice in your lower register, you know, la, la, la. Don't go in there, hey, hey, hey. Take it down, you know, take it down a notch. Well, I wore cowboy boots and I had a mustache. Can you imagine?
You.
My friend looked back and said, who does she think she's fooling?
But that you also had, you struggled back in those days, Leslie. You had some pretty dark days. You had problems with substance abuse. You ended up in jail. I mean, what do you think made your life unravel once you got to Hollywood?
I don't know. I just think I've always, you know, around the rooms of recovery, they talk of this gene, you know, that addictive people have. And I used to think, oh, bullshit, you're just infantilism. You just need to grow up. No, there's something, because I see it in my family, you know, with one twin who we've had, the dark twin, you know, she's had problems. And I think, I don't know what it was. I do think that once I got sober, I was 42 years old, and I remember thinking, my friend said to me, and this is a terrible thing to say, but he said, you're a fag-hating fag, honey. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, you have so much self-hatred, you know, so a lot of that was internal homophobia. That's just what it was. It was the shame, you know, having been brought up in the church. Also, I've been baptized 14 times. We're not gonna go down that road. But anyway, but just accepting something that I knew, you know, was me. I was born this way. And so anyway, it took years and years and years of, I'm glad I got into recovery, because you don't go over your problems, you don't go under your problems, you go through. And
you're doing well now.
I'll tell you a really funny story, though. When I first got into recovery, my spiritual advisor said, your greatest fear, Leslie, and fear is what drives us to drink and drug, your greatest fear is heterosexual men. I said, well, no shit, it wasn't exactly a picnic on the playground, you know? And he said, well, I want you to join a stag recovery group, all men. And I said, I was scared to death. I don't know why. So I went and joined this recovery group. There were 50 of the butchest men you've ever seen. And my advisor said, I want you to walk right up to the podium, and I want you to tell them I am scared to death of you men. And so right before the meeting started, I called him, and I said, do you think I should just tell them that I'm gay just right off the bat? He goes, honey, you got to walk to the podium. They're going to know.
You know what I think is so interesting, too, that while you're in the throes of some of your really tough days, you were ministering to AIDS victims because you were in California at the height of the crisis. And I'm curious what motivated you to do that and what you learned from that experience.
Well, you know, what happened was, and it's when the pandemic started, I remember thinking to myself, I've been through this. On some scale, I kept thinking, and it hit me, like in 1982, here we were, gay men were dropping like flies. We couldn't get help from anyone. The government was not really helping us. And I remember looking at one another and saying, we're gonna have to take care of our own. And so all these, you know, groups started, and I got very involved with an organization called Project Nightlight, which was, all we did was sit with men who were in hospice near the end. And so all of that was happening on top of, it was a very tumultuous time, but I look back and it wasn't a sad time for me. You know, we galvanized, and I'm hoping kind of that the same thing is gonna happen as we come through this pandemic, because what happened was, after it was all over, the gay community, we were strong. We were more apt to reach out to one another, to help one another. We'd all been through it together. And I'm hoping maybe with this pandemic that we'll come out the other end, and because this doesn't know, you know, gay, straight, white, black, all over the world, you know, maybe we can come through this and be kinder, you know, be more willing to...
Wouldn't that be nice? Woo! Wouldn't that be nice?
Brother Jordan's in the pulpit.
I mean, you know, I write in my book about how, you know, first of all, your big break came in Will and Grace when you played Beverly Leslie. And it was a role originally for Joan Collins, but it landed in your lap somehow, Leslie. I mean, and I write a lot in my book about how much change we've actually witnessed when it comes to gay rights. You know, I covered Matthew Shepard, that darling boy who was beaten to death in Wyoming and talked about, you know, all kinds of issues facing the gay community. Then I, you know, fast forward 17 years, I interviewed Jim Obergefell, the plaintiff in the same-sex marriage ruling by the Supreme Court. And when you look at the strides that have made been made, and granted, not everywhere in the country, but in general, do you feel heartened by that? And did you ever think in your lifetime, growing up as a little boy in Chattanooga, Tennessee, that we would see a culture where there's much more acceptance?
I thought I was the only queer on the planet. I thought I was the only one. I mean, what would I know? I was in an elevator in Denver one time, and there was a lady, a little lady there, and she said, I love your work. I said, oh, thank you. You know, I wasn't really paying attention. And she said, my name's Judy Shepherd. And I burst into tears, and we got off the elevator and talked in depth about all that. But, you know, to have been on the forefront of all of this, you know, and I'm very proud. You know, sometimes it's funny. I saw two guys sitting side by side holding hands not too long ago, and I walked by the table. I said, I just love this. I said, I hope you kids realize, you know, what we went through. They're like, uh-huh, yeah. Anyway, and I thought, oh, I don't want to be that one. You know, that old, we went through the war. You have no idea what the... They don't want to hear it. You know, they're going to have their own thing. And but, you know, I'm proud. I'm proud to have been a part of all that.
We'll be right back.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tear at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You have so much going on, as you were talking about. You've got this show with me, Mayim Bialik. Yes. She's doing Jeopardy. She's doing a great job,
yes,
don't you think?
Yes.
And you've got this country album, which was, you right? You recorded these songs that you were mentioning with all these famous country artists. And you look so cute in your outfit. I wanted to show a video of you singing with Vince Gill. I think we queued that up. Can you guys roll that?
If I was a liar, tell you what I'd do. I think I'd quit my life to work on a building, too. I'm working on a building. It's a whole
house building for my Lord, for my Lord.
So great. You are just having a ball. I am so, it's so great. I mean, it's so great to see you just being discovered by so many people, and you're having so much fun, Leslie, doing all these things. You wrote a book, you've got an album, you've got this show. Do you sometimes say you want to pinch yourself?
Every night I lay in bed and I just think, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And you know, this was, I'm a Tennessee boy, so to be doing the Ryman, you know, the Ryman Theater, it was just beyond anything.
I like the fringe.
Yes. Well, I've got a new one. I'm doing the Ryman again on the 30th of November, and I've got a brand new outfit.
Good. So. Before we go, we got a quick lightning round, Leslie Jordan.
Oh.
Can we do it?
Yes.
Okay. Here we go. What's your favorite country artist, or who's your favorite country artist?
Dolly Parton.
Okay. Mine are the Chicks. Okay. What is your favorite home cooked meal?
Beef stew. My mother's beef stew.
Okay. I like Aunt Ina Garten's chicken. Okay. What's your go-to karaoke song?
The one about. I remember it all. Fancy. I remember it all very well, just because I know the words.
What
is
that?
It's Reba McEntire, but see, I was a big fan of Bobby Gentry, who wrote, I remember it all very well. Looking back, it was the summer I turned 18. It's a girl singing it, but anyway.
Mine is Crazy by Patsy Cline.
Oh, I love that.
Okay, what would be your dream job if you weren't doing what you're doing?
Something to do with horses.
Really?
Yeah. I'm back. I rode my whole life, and I'm back riding, 66 years old. And I went over to the Los Angeles Equestrian Center, and I said, and I just walked into a barn, but it was a barn that handles show horses, saddlebreds. I always rode like hunter jumpers, but these, you sit back and you look pretty, and I'm going to start showing horses.
Are you?
Yes.
Good for you. Okay. Mine would be cabaret singer.
Oh.
Okay. What's your happy place?
On Ambien. No. No. I've had several awful things. I took an Ambien one time and I woke up and I had ordered, I thought I got too fat at Christmas, and I had ordered Slim Fast, and they sent me boxes of food for Slim Fast, and I had about, I think there were 68 desserts, and I took an Ambien and ate all 68 desserts.
Come on. You that happens. You sleepwalk and you eat.
You eat.
That can happen.
I'm not going to do that again.
Okay. All right. We got two more. What's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie is Coal Miner's Daughter.
Oh, I love that movie,
love that
too.
Movie.
Sissy Spacek, right?
Sissy Spacek.
As Loretta Lynn.
Uh-huh, and LaVon Helm was in it, who I've loved him with the... Anyway, LaVon Helm, y'all know who that is.
I do. Some of...
LaVon Helm played her daddy in the movie, but he started a group called The Band. I pulled into Nazareth, just feeling about
a half past. Oh, yeah, of course.
That's LaVon Helm.
Oh, yeah, of course. All right.
The night they drove old Dixie down. That's LaVon.
Yeah. Oh, I love him. I didn't understand who you were saying. Okay. And what are you most excited about now that you're such a big deal, Leslie Jordan?
I think that I'm excited that I'm at a place in my life. I'm 66 years old. I've pretty much accomplished what I set out to do. And so everything, it just seems like is gravy now. So I have no big thoughts. Oh, I want to do this. I want to do that. I've done it all. And so there's something, you know, they always tell you, just live it one day at a time. Well, yeah, that's not easy. But I'm trying to do that.
And you're just having fun.
I'm having a ball.
Well, thank you for coming out.
Katie Couric.
Leslie Jordan.
Thank you, honey.
Thank you.
Come see me at the Ryman.
Thank you again to my friend Leslie Jordan. And if you don't follow him already on Instagram,
Well, shit. What are you waiting for? He's the Leslie Jordan. Next Question with Katie Couric is a production of iHeartMedia and Katie Couric Media. The executive producers are me, Katie Couric, and Courtney Litz. The supervising producer is Lauren Hansen. Associate producers, Derek Clements and Adriana Fazio. The show is edited and mixed by Derek Clements. For more information about today's episode or to sign up for my morning newsletter, Wake Up Call, go to katiecouric.com. You can also find me at Katie Couric on Instagram and all my social media channels. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, everyone, it's Katie Couric, and I want to tell you about one of my new favorite podcasts. It's called A Really Good Cry with the amazing Roddy Devlukia, a plant-based chef, entrepreneur, and now a podcast host who will guide you through a journey of self-discovery, one tear at a time. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Roddy Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.